Welcome to The Lonely Marketer, sponsored by Pager. My name is Glenn Southam, and this is your show for all things recruitment marketing. We share the challenges, the successes, advice, and the screw-ups from the leading marketing talent working in recruitment. And most importantly, find out what their favourite swear word is. We speak to the companies working to make marketing recruitment more effective and efficient, and to those people who have opinions that make you think about things a little bit differently. You can find me on LinkedIn, and if you want to follow the bear, then head over to thelonelymarketers.com for links to all of our social channels and to sign up for our newsletter. But now, it's time for the show. Let's do this. Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode number 97. We're inching closer and closer to the milestone of 100. I'm delighted today to be joined by Amanda Ansell. She's the marketing manager at Carrington West. Hello, Amanda.
Hello.
We hooked up a little bit on LinkedIn prior to recording this. It was off the back of a recent podcast that some of the listeners may have heard on here around the members only event, and you kind of reached out, and it was really interesting because, you know, not to stereotype recruitment marketers a little bit, everyone kind of talks about having similar frustrations and challenges in their role, and your message to me was a lot more upbeat, a lot more positive. Talk about all the great stuff of recruitment marketing, which was, you know, it's really refreshing to hear. And I think people who listen to this show will be able to say, do you know what, things aren't as bad as sometimes I make out, or as what we feel in the company. There are lots of positives to take. So I think let's focus on those positives in this episode and take it from there. But to start, just as a background and a little bit of a whistle stop tour of your career to your point of where you are now at Carrington West, just to give the listeners a little bit of a flavour of your experience, I'll pass over to you.
Thank you, and thank you very much for having me. My career is a little bit varied. I started off as much more of a traditional marketing background. I started off in publishing, media and advertising in the late 90s in London. So really, really quite traditional, really. I'm very broad in terms of the marketing disciplines and the marketing that I was involved with. And then after a few years and almost burnout, decided to have a family and do a little bit of traveling. So there I became what they call a trailing spouse. And I did freelance work, so copywriting as well as teaching English language and freelance ad hoc marketing consultancy in Germany, Australia, and then more recently Hong Kong.
Wow.
So yeah, very, very, very different to a lot of people you probably speak with.
Yeah. And when did you enter the world of, you know, the wonderful world of recruitment marketing?
So when I was in Hong Kong, I came with really the idea that I wanted to do a little bit more marketing. I was doing copywriting and I wanted to do a more marketing because I didn't want to lose my marketing skills. I knew I'd want to reach back to them. And I knew that if I didn't, then I would lose any interest, especially as everything was so digital and I just didn't have a clue. I mean, yes, social media is fine, but you know, Google Analytics was like another world to me, for example, and I was very aware that I needed to stay on top of everything. And it just so happened that the marketing role that I found was in an executive search company in Asia. It's in financial services, and I'd been working in Australia in risk management. So there was a sort of professional services marketing theme to what I was doing. There was also a theme. I had sort of decided that my key expertise and what I enjoyed doing was going into a company that didn't have a marketing team or a marketing resource in place and introducing marketing and starting up, and then, you know, hopefully when I did move on, leave a team and a fully established processes in place.
And then you're back in the UK now, you're settled, yes, in inverted commas. Am I allowed to say settled?
you're not, you're not... Yeah, as settled as anyone who's moved around a bit. Yeah, no, absolutely. I come from the south coast of the UK and I'm back on the south coast of the UK, and it's all good.
And you, like I mentioned, you work for Carrington West. You started there in January 2020, I believe.
Yes, I did. Yeah. So I started just before the COVID pandemic. I had 3 months in the office. So having been sort of work from home freelance for 15 years, I then thought, great, I'm going to actually be around people and a new sector and bring all my enthusiasm for marketing into the office. And then 3 months later, I was back at my desk at home.
Which in some ways, although frustrating, it must have been easier in inverted commas for you to be able to adapt to that lifestyle and probably impart some of that knowledge and workings to the rest of the team at Carrington West.
Yeah, absolutely. I think people that struggled, I was able to say, look, just put WhatsApp video on your phone and you could be making calls and your team could be making calls, but you can see each other. You know, just set it up so you feel like you're in the office. If that's what you need to do, if you need the motivation, use Teams, use all the resources that we had at our fingertips. We actually moved pretty seamlessly. It's pretty impressive to get 60 odd people, completely remote overnight. We had to buy a bit of tech, but that was it, and it was all set up within a few days, and it was really done over the weekend, and it was business as usual. So it was a short, sharp pain, but it people got there, and I was kind of really proud of everyone for doing it, because I was able to say, look, it's easy, you can do it. Yeah, it's lonely, we've got to think about your well-being, especially if you've never done it before, but it's fine, you can do it.
And did you join Carrington West in kind of that similar scenario that you mentioned? Were you kind of the first marketer there?
I was, yes. So the company was just coming up to 8 years old, and they had marketing activity in place. It was managed a little bit by outsourcing. Mm-hmm. It was overseen by the senior leadership team and the MD, who's very, very marketing savvy, so kind of totally knew what he needed to do and what he wanted. And there were a few junior people in sort of the admin side who were given the tasks, things like managing social media. Yeah. But there wasn't a cohesive strategy to drive the business forward. So I very much, it was one of those freak sort of I found them, they found me at the same time scenarios. I was looking and I came across the company because I was literally saying, okay, I don't want to commute into London, I'd rather commute south. So I just identified companies that I might like to work with, and at the same time they were advertising for someone, so we sort of met and it worked out really well.
Do you know what's kind of really refreshing, and it probably is going to frame a lot of this conversation here, and I often talk about kind of the shift that's happening within the recruitment world with regards to marketing, is that their first hire, Carrington West's first proper hire in inverted commas in marketing, is someone with a good level of experience under their belts, and that's quite uncommon, I think, if you go back probably over the past decade or so, to hire someone like yourself, and when they've never had a dedicated marketing person, just shows, I think, the increased value of marketing within some recruitment firms.
Yeah, and I think it's really important to bring a different opinion of marketing, and someone has different background and not just recruitment marketing. Mm. Yes, it's really important to build up your knowledge of the industry, understand the target audiences, because it is very different to a lot of other, but recruitment has got a bit of a bad reputation, but it needs to think of itself in a better light. We are selling a professional service, so we kind of, just because we don't charge a retained service like an executive search firm does, and we're there, maybe the perception is we're scrabbling around for fees on a contingent model. We're not. Saying something that someone else can't do, otherwise they wouldn't have come to you, and it's got a value, and you need to think of yourself in that way before you can actually before you can understand what your brand is. You need to know what your service is and what the value to your clients and candidates is, and coming from a different background other than recruitment helps you with that.
I suppose that kind of takes nicely in terms of what, from your position, having come into the business, what do you see as the role of a marketer within recruitment? now and moving forward? Because I think it has changed, but you know, from your opinion and you know your experiences, what do you see kind of the roles, the responsibilities? How does marketing fit into the wider you know recruitment business jigsaw, if you like?
It brings everything together. It's often put together for sales and marketing is a term we hear together all the time, but it you know, okay, it kind of is related, but it's not, it goes across everything. And I think when I was in my initial conversations with the senior team here, I appreciated that they knew that. I don't sit within a shared service team or a support team. I sit on my own and I report directly into the MD. And that is because they know that I transcend all the teams. And a lot of my work here is internal communications, because we work on the basis that we put our people first, and our vision is very much that we want to be the best employer. That's the first line of our vision. And by being the best employer and having the best people, offering the best training for our people, we can therefore offer the best service to our clients and candidates. So I think that marketing has to go around all of that. It can't just be in one part. I filter into everything. I work really closely with HR on engagement and on training. I'm involved in giving training sessions as well as sitting in training sessions and learning for myself. I'm involved in candidate attraction for our recruiters, not just our brand as a recruitment company. And I think that's where, you know, it's so important to remember that it's not just this support function for recruiters.
Yeah, that's I think that's really interesting what you're saying there, is because there's a lot of talk at the moment, and rightly so, in a lot of places about marketing, you know, shifting and being kind of an inbound lead generator, and you know, being able to, you know, put a value on everything in terms of generating actual monetary leads on the clients and candidate side. And it's really interesting that, you know, the starting point from Carrington West is internal, but it's coming from a true internal position, from the belief that it's going to filter down, and the byproducts of treating and employing the best people and creating the best workplace will automatically mean that you kind of provide the best service. You don't need any, you know, recruitment tips or tricks or shortcuts, because it naturally happens. I think that's really refreshing.
It absolutely does. It's really easy to see, you know, when we get reviews, when we get feedback and we process feedback and share as a team, it's very much okay, but this was done really well and that resulted in a placement, or it resulted in X number of candidates added to the database. We can track it all. We know what works, and we know the good consultants that are doing everything right, because we look after them and we're giving them the tools and the learning to do their job properly. And that's where it starts. And it's very much based on this idea of, we've heard about flywheels and funnels and all the rest of it. We talk about a flywheel for the whole business, and it's really, I'm not sure I like using those kind of models all the time, because they do sound a bit silly, but it starts, if you start with the best people, that can't help, but the outcome from that is the best service, and the outcome from that is therefore the best candidate experience, and then it keeps going round and round, and people will come back and they remain your customers, they will remain your clients, they will remain your candidates, they'll come back 2 years down the line when they want to change their job, or 6 months when they change their contract, and they're fully invested. And as I said, I think marketing sits around the edge of it, because the content side of things is that you're keeping them engaged whilst they're in their job. You're not just trying to say to a potential candidate or potential client, you're looking for a job now, come to us. You're saying, we've given you lots of information that's of use to you in your career whilst you've been contracting with us, or whilst you're in a placement or not, and then you're going to come back to us. We're going to be front of mind.
Yeah, so you're at least going to be in the top three of companies that you kind of think of, isn't it? That's the
yeah, you would hope so. And it's a sort of like the low hanging fruit, isn't it?
Yeah, you mentioned a couple of times there about, you know, marketing's not a support function, not back office, or, you know, these, all of those phrases make my teeth itch a little bit, to be honest, when you throw stuff in. You did mention that you kind of sit by yourself, like a lot of marketers do in recruitment, but as a department, and it was one of the things that I picked up on in your message when we first spoke was you are a kind of a true department. You have the budgets, you have the structure, yes, and you have the collaboration. Was that something, yes, that you, in inverted commas, you demanded when you joined, or was it something that you kind of implemented quite quickly and everyone was just like, yep, Amanda, get on with it type thing?
So there's a huge element of trust, which is what attracted me to the role. So yes, I was absolutely, there was a budget. I know what my budget is. I've clawed more of a budget as I've proved my worth, and I've taken over other people's budgets. So I manage all of the job board advertising budgets for the whole company. No, you know, nobody signs a contract for a job board or anything without me being the negotiator. And
most marketers want to get rid of the job board management. No. It's interesting that you wanted to take it back.
Because, you know, if you think about a candidate journey, sometimes you could place someone that they've only ever dealt with one person on the phone, they've applied for one job with one logo in the corner on one job board. So why would you not want to make the most of that brand exposure and increase the number of touch points that person has with your brand and communicate what your brand values are through that job ad, where that job ad appears, how written, and what you spend on it and where you push it out to. So I think it's just, marketing's got lots of hats, and it's really nice to be involved with the content. It's really nice to be involved with social media. Obviously you've got website, you've got the digital stuff. It's all got to be done, and is all in a way a tick box, because it's the foundations of everything we do. But if you don't pay attention to where most of your money is and where most of your candidates or clients are dealing with you, then you're on to nothing.
The Lonely Marketer is sponsored by Pager. Marketers use Pager to get 90% of those pesky consultants to share relevant content to tap into their networks. You can also schedule social content to your company pages. Pager gives your consultants automated and fully branded job adverts, driving traffic directly back to your website, which is then 60% more likely to convert. Not bad. Head over to pager.co, that's P-A-I-G-E-R.co, to find out more.
Marketing always has so much to do, spinning plates. You know, it sounds like you've grabbed a few plates that weren't yours as well at some point, and are now yours. How do you do that by yourself? You know, you said you're a one person team as it stands at the moment. Yeah,
I am. I am hiring at the moment. But yes, I am one person. But you, as you said, we have a budget, so I outsource everything I can. So if I need, you know, I have a graphic designer, I have teams of people I call, and I don't try and do anything myself that I can't do. I don't waste time fiddling around producing graphics for stuff that I'm not qualified to do or that take me hours to learn how to do it. It's a waste of budget, my salary budget, if you like. Someone can do it better. I know what I want. I worked in advertising, and as I say, my broad general marketing background means I know how to get from other people what I need. And I think that works across the business as well. I use every piece of administrative support I can that is available for me. So we do have a business support team, and I can draw on them. You know, I don't cut things out. and just because I know what a PDF should look like doesn't mean I'm the person in the company that makes them all. So just pass it off.
and obviously this podcast isn't an advert, but what was the but I think people will be interested in this, and there's more and more marketing functions in recruitment looking to hire now. What was the trigger for you to get an extra head to add it to your team, and B, what are their responsibilities in that going to look like? Because I think the structure of recruitment marketing teams and when to hire, what skills to hire for, it's always coming up in conversation. So I think that'll be really useful for people to hear.
Yeah, so for me, because I have a very broad background and I do hold a strategic role, and I very much work on the strategy at that level, although I'm responsible for delivering it as well, that is very much my expertise and my level of experience. So I need people that can deliver For me, it's predominantly managing social media and digital marketing channels because I find it quite time consuming. And that, so I'm bringing someone in probably an apprentice level. So they're getting the kind of education that I can't necessarily provide them, because I know what I want from everything, but I don't necessarily want to spend all the time working out how to do it. So that's very important, that someone who's willing to learn, who's going to come in, I want them to have a broad digital marketing background. And I found actually, since advertising the role, that it's really, people really want to get into social media and digital marketing, whatever sector you're in. The fact that it's, you know, we recruit for bridge engineers and geologists and streetlight workers doesn't seem to put people off.
I think we have a responsibility, I think, as well, is that the apprentice level is a great option. And I've had a couple of episodes here where people have spoken about their apprentice experience, you know, Sean Fury at the First Point Group and things like that. The struggle I've seen and experienced is you mentioned kind of people wanting to get into social media and the digital marketing, is I think us as an employers has that responsibility, especially within recruitment, that doesn't mean that you're going to be, you know, on Instagram all the time, or you're going to be, you know, making TikToks. It is a broader role within social media, because I think we run that risk. It's just the societal world that we live in, where we see a lot of young people making a hell of a lot of money and are, you know, much better marketers than I'll ever be, being able to do it. But that isn't the reality in the real world, if you like.
No, and it's all about data. In the real world, digital marketing is all about data, because you can track everything you do online, and you have to be able to deliver ROI, because the data is there and available to you. You have to use it, and you have to deliver against it. The soft, touchy feely branding marketing is less easy to measure, and you do, because you have to, but it's the long game. Whereas you put out a post on social media and you immediately know how successful it is by who engages with it. Exactly.
Yeah. You mentioned kind of working with the consultant teams, you know, the whole sales and marketing combination. You know, a lot of the people there within the business, like say they would have been doing their job, making sales, being very successful before you joined, before a marketer had joined, so who was solely focused on marketing. How's that relationship between you and the consultants kind of developed? You know, what do you use them for? What do they use you for? And how do you keep that, you know, that relationship as a, you know, a give and a take one, rather than them demanding from you or vice versa?
Yeah, I think it's really important to find that balance between being reactive and proactive. You know, you have your plan of what you want to achieve for the brand in line with the business vision, and you work and focus to deliver that. In terms of then communicating that with a wider team, it's very much demonstrating the value you're giving them. Recruiters are okay at their personal brands, they get a lot better the more time they're spending on LinkedIn and the more training available in that kind of area there is. But at the end of the day, if they work for a credible, successful, well-branded company, then that's going to open more doors for them, regardless of how good their brand is, especially the more junior ones. But even people, the top billers, they all appreciate it. They can get in the door if people have heard of them, in scenarios where they can't, if they're just relying on their own name. And it's demonstrated to them, okay, this is the value that marketing has added, right? They've heard of Carrington West because we've been pushing out this content here. They've heard of Carrington West because we've partnered with this organization in your sector, and we're running these research surveys with this, and we're at these events. So they know, they have a brand awareness and a brand perception before you've picked up the phone and made a call. And I think you're giving them tools. So one of the very first things I did was we used SharePoint, very underrated tool. And I went in there and I just set up this marketing toolbox. It's a really simple thing. It's just a folder and it just has templates in it. But it was like, oh, okay, so I can do that. And it's totally branded. And I know it's right when it goes out. And I'm empowering them to do it themselves. I'm giving them tools. I don't have to go and write presentations for them. I can proof them. I can check them. I can have standard templates. But I'm giving them tools to help them. So in that way, I said I'm not a sales support function. But I'm not. I'm giving them a support tool, but I've given it to them in the wider sphere of marketing and branding, as per our corporate identity and our brand values.
Yeah, I often use that analogy is, you know, kind of marketing builds the toolkit and now and again just has to, you know, teach someone how to use something now and again. You end up being a little bit of an educator. And it's like anything in the world, isn't it? If you look at any teaching, whether it's teaching of kids all the way up to you know, veteran recruitment consultants, is that showing is a lot more effective in terms of you know, someone learning and picking stuff up rather than telling them that you've got to use this, you've got to do this.
Doesn't work. I mean, you have to share successes. You have to kind of cross pollinate ideas. And if you work with someone in a particular area and something works, have a great success.
Put it on a pedestal.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we did a survey, and when we got the results, we saw X number of people have replied. Responded, and we gave that list to someone who then went through and said, oh, I know that person, and they followed up and they had 15 jobs out, you know, on 2 hours after the survey had gone out. Great. Yeah. That was a reason to speak to that person that they didn't have before, as well as all of the content that we're going to get out of off the back of that survey and the research we did. So
what's next?
Really also important.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I think it's really important to make recruiters realize that they're experts at what they do. I think they undersell themselves a lot, and they don't realize how much information they sit on. And, you know, whenever I say, okay, let's write a blog about this, you know, this, we're writing a series of blogs this month about this. I want you to write about this. Well, I don't know anything about that. Well, you do. You make X number of calls a week. You speak to X number of candidates. That is a lot of information. Just jot some notes down, give them to me at the end of the week. We'll form an article. That's great. And they're surprised at how well that content is received.
Yeah, I think, and that goes for anyone listening, is you're sitting on a treasure trove of conversations that are happening weekly. You know, there'll be common threads of stuff that candidates are saying that's always coming up. If you're hearing the same conversation kind of 5-10 times a week, that means people are interested in talking about that stuff, create content around it, because you're almost certain that it's going to get a high level of engagement. And same on the client side, clients who are having similar challenges, is like, it's great to create a process of, you know, people being able to note that stuff down, because it really makes marketing's job easier, rather than, you know, at the start of the week or start of the month thinking, oh, what should we write about today, and default into, I don't know, interview techniques or CV guides and things like that. It's like, use the stuff that's being spoken about day in, day out. So I think, yeah, it's really useful.
Yeah.
So what is next for marketing, for recruitment marketing? Have you sensed a shift, kind of, I'm wary to say this, post-COVID, in terms of the kind of stuff that marketers should be doing or can be doing moving forward? What do you see as the future?
I think in businesses that have scaled up or are scaling up, that marketing will have to be a bigger department. I think the departments are relatively small, and a lot of companies are, you know, lucky to have one or two people. I think that there is so much to cover that the jobs within the team will be more specialized, whether you have someone who's a digital marketer and then maybe someone who just does content, and then maybe someone who actually you bring things like design and graphic design and in-house brochure production, whatever it is. Yeah. And I think that will become a thing going forward. although I, when I was working in Asia, I did feel that Asia was a little bit behind the curve in terms of recruitment marketing. It certainly wasn't in terms of the fact that people had their roles. They were quite pigeonholed into what they did. So if you were into digital marketing, you wouldn't then go and apply for a role as a general marketeer. So it did make it quite hard to find people who were good in recruitment marketing, because you do have to wear so many hats. So by default, I mean, I had a team of five for a company similar size, and we worked across different markets as well. It wasn't just Hong Kong, but Singapore, China, and the UK. So we needed different skills in different places, and yeah, very much someone was focused on one aspect, and then we all came together to produce the plan and implement the plan. I think that will come here, because I think that marketing is proving its value, and I think that it's becoming more sophisticated, and I think it's becoming more data orientated, and you can't have one person just up to their elbows in spreadsheets. It doesn't work, because they won't be able to do anything else.
Yeah, completely agree. And do you know what? I think a lot of people will be nodding in agreement at that as well. I think it's kind of no excuses now for marketers kind of working in this industry. There's enough tools, platforms, and everything like that to be able to track and prove your worth. There's no hiding place for marketing, which people should see as an opportunity to really, you know, elevate the profession within the industry.
Yeah, 100%. You can actually say that the success is off the back of a campaign or your ongoing branding activity. You can track it back to what you're doing, which you maybe couldn't do 10 years ago. And as you say, you can also utilize a lot of tech. So tech is becoming more important, but I also think it's also a quite crowded space, and it's a little bit overwhelming. And I think we spoke initially about TikTok was one of the things we connected over. It's just another thing you have to have. We've gone from managing three or four platforms to having to manage five, six, seven platforms.
Yeah.
And eventually you'll just have to pick the ones that work. You can't be omnipresent, and you don't need to be omnipresent. The trick is going to be kind of working out where your target market is moving to and following them, or
100%. You can't be led by the shiny new tools and just say we need to go on it. You need to be led, like you say, by your audiences and what's going to make the most impact. So that's really good. I always, you know, we always like to end the show on kind of like a five quick questions. Always gives a little bit of insight into the person we're speaking to. So first off, what's your favorite brand?
I think this is a really difficult question, because
it's really difficult for marketers.
It is really difficult for marketers, because we want to be a bit clever and not just kind of go, oh, Google, Apple. I'm going to say Mercedes. And Mercedes, because having lived in lots of different places around the world, it means the same thing. And even when you live somewhere like Germany, where taxis are Mercedes, and then you live in other places where, you know, a Mercedes would drive down the street and everyone would stop and take photos. But it means the same thing. It stands for quality and safety and aspiration. It manages to be consistent across all markets. And when you consider the way we buy cars, you know, through dealership networks, I think they've done an amazing job.
It's good. I think it's a first as well. Like you say, it's nice to not have an innocent or an Apple and a Mercedes with good thinking behind it as well. It's always good justifications. What about your favorite sound?
That's a very strange question.
It's good. Yeah.
So I wanted to say something maybe a little bit romantic. And, you know, like waves crashing on the ocean, yeah, or something like that, because I come from the seaside. But actually, at the moment, I would say if I hear my alarm clock, I'm really happy, because it means I'm asleep when my alarm clock goes off.
Oh, I like it. A little bit of reverse engineering of the setup there. I like that. Yeah. And the best bit of tech that you use, you know, at work or at home?
Yeah. So I Probably my AirPods. I love my AirPods because I have just started listening to lots of true crime podcasts. I'm more of a reader than a listener or a watcher. And I've started in lockdown with lots of extended dog walks that I was doing, plugging in, listening to podcasts, and actually not having leads everywhere is fantastic. That's so good. I like my AirPods.
Yeah, and on the date of this recording, Apple have just announced a new generation of AirPods. So maybe get them on the Christmas list, Amanda.
Of course they have.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the reasons why Apple is not my favorite brand, because it cost me a lot of money updating to the latest.
once they've got you in, it's very hard to break out of. You know, you've traveled around a bit, and you've done different jobs, you know, a lot of marketing focus, but teaching as well. If you could do any job, and money wasn't an object, you know, whatever you earn, it was good enough for you to have the lifestyle you wanted, what would be your dream job?
So I'm a bit of a plane spotter, so I think an air traffic controller would suit me very well.
That's a really intense job as well, isn't it?
It is. I'm not quite sure if I could cope with the stress of it, but I, the idea of just watching planes landing all day is quite appeals to me.
I love that. A plane spotter.
I know, it's really sad.
Just dig in. I like a follow-up question. Has that always been from a young age?
Yes. My father worked in the flight simulation industry, and I do remember going with him to work, but also I grew up in Shoreham-by-Sea, which has a little airport, and we used to go on a Saturday and sit by the runway with a little transponder radio and listen to them talking on radio and take off.
I love it.
And it kind of grew from there. And when I met my husband when I was at university in West London, and I used to make him take me to the Queen's Building in Terminal 2 and go up to the top and watch the aeroplanes come in.
Can you name kind of a plane by kind of its towel and things like that?
Yeah, I used to be able to. I'm not quite as up on it now. When I was living in Asia, I was traveling a lot, so it was more about the seating configuration and the quality of the drinks.
I love it. Knowing the demographics of the listeners of this podcast, there'll probably be quite a few who don't get this reference, but it sounds like you would have been a great contestant on You Bet. And I remember You Bet as a kid. It was hosted by Matthew Kelly, and you know, yep, it'd be the smallest thing, and there'd be like child geniuses on there who could just name everything of a particular type. I love this. I love it.
Yeah, I know. There is a really good YouTube channel called Big Jet TV as well. So if I can't sleep, I do actually watch Big Jet TV, which is usually from Heathrow.
Excellent. I love this. And do you know what? I don't think we've had a single swear word on this episode so far. I'm not sure whether you're a big swearer or not, but do you have a favourite swear word?
I do have a little bit of a potty mouth. I've been very refrained, just in case my parents listen to this, or my children. I'm a huge fan of alliteration. So something like, you know, for sake is probably what comes out of my mouth most. But in terms of, you know, having lived overseas, there's been a lot of swearing in foreign languages over the years.
And that's completely acceptable. You can teach that to kids and everything, because if it's not in your home language, it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, we pick up lots of expressions, normally of exasperation. So from Australia, as a family, we all say, far out, anything. And then when we're in Hong Kong, it's, oh, yeah.
There you go.
So
cool. Do you know what? You know, it's a great way to end the show, to find out a little bit more about you and your plane obsession, of
plane
course.
Spotting.
Yeah. But you know, the main part of the show, kind of your thinking about recruitment marketing, kind of the journey you've been on, and a little bit of insight into you know, how departments could be set up and their approach. I think people are going to take a lot of value from it. I always ask this at the end of the show, but it's the same answer every time. If people want to kind of connect with you and find out more, you're on LinkedIn, and that's probably the best place to find you. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. LinkedIn is probably the best. I don't live and die by it, but I am on it most days through obviously work.
So. Right, we most are. So that is that's the end of episode number 97. I will see you at episode 98. But for now, Amanda, thank you very much for joining.
Thank you.
I'll speak to you all very soon.